You're back?
Yes.
Nice. Very nice. Great to see you. Let's do introductions around.
Donald Lynn, Ellie,
Jeffrey,
you two,
Jim,
Samuel,
Ryan,
Britt,
Chris,
John,
Bob,
Wendy,
Isaiah.
Haven't seen you for a while either, Chris. Glad to see you. We are on chapter 19 of the Hearts of the Diamond Sutra, a short one. But not short when you start to think about it. So it's worth taking a very careful, feelingful look at what's being said here. It sounds totally, well, I'll let you decide how it sounds. It's on page 321 in the book. Someone like to read? Thank you.
Subhuti, what do you think? If some noble son or daughter filled the billion words of this universe with the seven jewels and gave them as a gift to the Tathagatas, the Arhans, the fully enlightened ones, would the body of merit produced as a result by that noble son or daughter be great? Subhuti replied, great indeed, Bhagavan, it would be great, Sugata. The Buddha said, so it would, Subhuti, so it would. The body of merit produced as a result by that noble son or daughter would be immeasurably, infinitely great. And how so? A body of merit, Subhuti, a body of merit is spoken of by the Tathagata as no body. Thus it is called a body of merit. Subhuti, if there were a body of merit, the Tathagata would not have spoken of a body of merit as a body of merit.
Okay. Chao Ming calls this the teaching that pervades the Dharma realm. Thich Nhat Hanh broke down the Diamond Sutra's 32 chapters into four different sections and named them. The first one he called the Dialectics of Prajnaparamita, the vow, the practice, the realization. It starts out with showing how Buddha lived, showing how he enacted the Dharma. He wasn't even exactly preaching. He was just standing up and walking into town and then coming back. The second one is called the Language of Non-Attachment. A very essential part of this teaching, the most essential part of this teaching. The third part, chapters 9 to 17, is called The Answer is in the Question. So Subhuti is asking questions of Buddha, and Buddha's asking questions of Subhuti. Slowly the answers emerge. And at first Subhuti is really stuck. He's stuck in emptiness. He's had deep experience of emptiness and imagines that this is it. Just as Dogen in his Fukansa Zengi, when he talks about how to do zazen, says you'll get to a point where you think you're there. And he says you're just on the vaguest, barest outside part of it still. So Subhuti continues his questions, and Buddha continues with his questions, exposing more and more of the truth of things, which Thich Nhat Hanh calls chapters 18 to 32. So we've already done one of those chapters. Mountains and rivers are our own body. So this is familiar to us from Dogen. He has a whole chapter in called Mountains and Rivers Sutra. Mountains and rivers are our own body. So Subhuti is still caught he's been following the Shravaka path, listening carefully to the teachings and doing extremely well. So Buddha asks him about these jewels, because this is about as far as Subhuti has gotten. It's stuff. What if you give the most precious, wonderful, expensive, fabulous stuff away? What kind of merit will you achieve? And Subhuti says, oh, a heck of a lot. Lots and lots of merit. But he's attached to the form of things. Giving away things all by itself, really, if it's given with a sense of achieving merit, the way Emperor Wu did in the old story with Bodhidharma, he built temples and stupas and great universities, and he gave all of it. And then he said, how much merit did I get? And as soon as that I get part of it is in there in any way at all, there's no merit. There's absolutely none. And that's what Buddha is trying to tell Subhuti in this little chapter. That even though it looks like lots of merit, looks like it's great, great merit, and in some ways it is, if you give a starving child food, of course. But if you even in the back of your mind think, well, I gave the starving child this food, there's no merit anymore. Because merit comes when there's no self. When the self itself has been when there's the attachment to the self and the attachment to the self trying to aggrandize itself or identify itself in any way, it becomes a thought thing. If giving is done with no thought, there's great merit. That's what Buddha is saying. Li Wenhui says, if a person makes an offering of the seven jewels while attached to form in the hopes of attaining merit, this is delusion. Moreover, the merit thereby attained cannot be considered great. It does not compare to the merit of purity, detachment, and non-attainment. which is like space and without boundaries. With our self-concept, we're always creating a boundary, always making an edge. And Buddha is teaching us to see with a Dharma eye, to see where the edges are and what it is to be without edges. It's not that there are no edges. It's not that there's no form. The Heart Sutra says form is emptiness. But what he's saying here is emptiness is form. So don't mistake the form. Don't mistake the emptiness. Red Pine says, whereas the prajna eye sees only non-existence, the Dharma eye sees connections. In this case, a non-existing body of merits connections with liberation. The Buddha speaks of what doesn't exist because what doesn't exist obstructs our path to enlightenment. If something actually existed, it could not be limited by time, by space, or by conceptual dimensions. This is the Buddhist definition of reality, which is the Dharma body or true body of every Buddha, unlimited. But because we have not yet found our Dharma body, our unlimited, edgeless body, or Buddha nature, the Buddha speaks of bodies of merit. I'm going to read that again. Whereas the prajna eye sees only non-existence, that's subhuti, the Dharma eye sees connections, in this case, a non-existing body of merits, connections with liberation. The Buddha speaks of what doesn't exist because what doesn't exist obstructs our path to enlightenment. If we're attached to the idea of our merit in any way, it's an obstruction. It gets right in the way. If something actually existed, if there really was something there, it could not be limited by time or space or by ideas. This is the Buddhist definition of reality, which is the Dharma body or true body of every Buddha, unlimited. But because we have not yet found our Dharma body or Buddha nature, the Buddha speaks of bodies of merit. And one more. Seng Wei says, the Bhagavan tells Subhuti, if donors base themselves on false conceptions in their practice of giving, which is the first paramita, and are attached to a subject or object and think that merit is real, this turns out to be false. The Tathagata does not speak of such merit as great because merit does not exist. It's just one more idea. But if donors base themselves on the wisdom of the Buddha and remain detached from form in their practice of giving and do not consider merit to be real, this is not false. The Tathagata says such merit is truly great. If donors base themselves on the wisdom of the Buddha and remain detached from form in their practice of giving and do not consider merit to be real, this is false. This is not false. Such merit is truly great. So it's like the old story about Avalokiteshvara, the two monks talking about what it's like, what compassion is like, what Avalokiteshvara is like. And one of them says, oh, he's got hands and eyes all over his body. So the compassionate one can enact compassion at all times. And the other one said, oh, it's all, Avalokiteshvara is all eyes and hands, completely. And then it said that Avalokiteshvara's compassion is like someone asleep at night whose pillow slips and who reaches and replaces it. That it's not a thought thing. So this merit that they're talking about is really talking about giving. And giving is the deepest form of compassion. It's breaking the so-called barrier between self and other. And if we try to break that barrier with the still thinking about self and other as different, then it's still false, as he says. It's not real. Real merit is not exactly unconscious, but it's not a thought thing. It's an enacted thing. And as soon as we give, it's forgotten. Because it's not real. As soon as it's over, it's not real. If we hold on to it, then we're making up a story. So it's really important to let it all go, not to be attached to our actions, but to act from our heart and our belly in a natural, completely natural and unintellectual way. Just pick up the bug and put it off the sidewalk and fry an egg for your neighbor when they're laid up, and just do the things that come naturally. We all have it in us, but we get tangled up in trying to identify ourselves with how we act and how we do and who we are. This who we are is limitless. That's our Buddha nature. That's our Dharma nature. So you see, it's not such a small thing after all, this chapter. There must be questions. About any of it. Allie?
This isn't so much a question, but coincidence, this morning I read a quote, and I think it was from Gibran, about the birds and the trees have to give, but that's part of their nature, that if we look at nature, it's sort of pouring out because it needs to. And is that in some ways kind of a metaphor for what you're saying?
Yes. Yes. And that's us. I mean, the birds and the trees are us too. The mountains and the rivers are our own body. So, yeah. Yeah, beautiful.
But we get in the way of that, I guess. guess, when it comes to all the complications that we put on.
It gets very complicated. Yeah. I gave so-and-so a present, so they owe me one. You know, that's very easy to do. The whole thing about giving is really, really rich because we're involved with it all the time. Giving and taking and wanting and not wanting, it's all tied up in how we live our life. And some spiritual practices think the best way is just to give up everything and to live like Milarepa, you know, stark naked in a cave and the stinging things, nettles. He ate so many nettles, his skin turned green. And he was considered to be very pure. But you'll see as we go forward that that is not this ideal. That is not the teaching here at all. It's teaching how to be this right here, right now. But to understand it more deeply and more widely.
Curious. I always love that illusion of you're sleeping just without thinking, just your pillow. Who said that? Is that a Dogen? No.
It's.
Whenever I come across it, I just begin.
Yes, I think it's in the chapter on compassion. Yeah.
Every time.
Yeah. Well, it says it because we're so-called asleep, but something else is awake.
The whole idea of the not thinking. I mean, it's hard for examples. This example is great, the bees and the honey. The words make it so. This emptiness, and you know, the words are very cumbersome. Yet in Zen, I think we have the largest library around this practice. And again, it's looking for ways to describe, of course, but it's not. So I always just. Oh gosh, I'm attaching to a phrase again. Attaching to something.
Easy to do.
How do we say that? You can't say you do it naturally because it depends on whose model of natural it is.
No, each one of us is totally natural. There isn't any ideal natural, there's just your own. And that is. Our practice is to live from that place without so much artificial enhancement, you could say. Some, I don't know, mind-like Botox or something that we're always gussying up ourselves and making ourselves a little bit more better than we are.
I remember you used to tell me, I'm sure you might still, but stop trying to be so skillful. And I never understood that. I was slow, but I'm very good. Thank you.
Ron?
I think it's very hard, you know, to find this out in my own practice, taking care of aged parents, you know. Yeah. It's really hard to do for somebody and feel. And character, and not necessarily always be appreciated in the way
yes.
we feel. You know, we always want to, you know, to give something. I think we unconsciously, unless we're very advanced, kind of expect at least some gratitude, maybe a small word of thanks. You know, you will give it back to our parents, you know, when we were kids. When we were babies and such.
Yes.
We probably didn't necessarily express too much thanks. Just eating it, it's more like tantrums and the whole thing. So now, probably sort of going to a second childhood. And for some people, not all, but not all, but they can. It's very hard to just have this absolute compassion and attachment.
Yeah.
And spend one's time and so forth and then not expect
yes.
something back. Although maybe something will come back and suddenly we can't imagine or feel greater armor of things. But maybe not.
We don't know.
We yeah. don't know. That's a human condition.
But it's important to study that whole situation with the parents and with one's children also, because we tend to feel possessed by our parents and feel we possess our children. And in one sense, that's true, of course, that we come into each other's lives and take care of each other and are related. But in the broad sense, the dharmic sense, we don't possess anything, much less another person. I just finished a poem about my kids and how great they were as little kids and how adorable they were. And then they grew up to be these real tall, business-like men. That I don't know very well anymore, and they don't know me. Now, I ended by saying to them, I'm just a dream. And it's so strange, but that's really the way it is. We're not really very well known by anybody, and in our relationship and family relationships, there's a kind of formality that goes with it that can become also a deep attachment that as life goes on can be very painful if we don't acknowledge that it's really an attachment and it's false. It's an illusion. It's much easier to love people if you're not attached to them. But it's so hard with parents. It's the hardest job, I think.
Well, it's a good lesson. Because you see, you realize all of your expectations about another
yes.
person
yes.
are just magical.
Yes.
They are what they are. And, you know, what you think or what you feel should be.
yeah. It's great practice, right?
you know, you have the great experience sometimes.
I know. You're very brave to be doing it. Truly. Truly.
Well, those are real heartbreaking cases proving people have really bad Alzheimer's.
Yeah.
Some of them have passed down. They don't even recognize them.
Right.
Family anymore. You know, that's I haven't gotten into that situation myself, but I mean that's very heartbreaking.
It is.
Yeah.
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 Not really.
Yeah. Well, it's five of, or it's not quite eight, and Wendy has a whole lot of things to talk about, so maybe we should proceed to that before it gets too far gone. I have an announcement.
Okay.
I saw my surgeon yesterday, and I've got a date and a time and a place for the surgery. So some of you don't know, I'm going to have a new hip on the 1st of September at 7:30 a.m., which means I have to be there at 5:30, just like Sashin. And I'll be in the hospital for 5 days or so, and so that I'm pretty rehabilitated by the time I go home, because I live alone. They don't want to just send me straight home. So I won't be able to be here for a few weeks. I won't be able to drive. Beth is coming on the 6th of September from Cambodia, almost straight from Cambodia. I think she arrives on the 1st. And Cornelia's going to come and speak. And who else? Is Nisha coming?
Donna
Lynn, good. Good.
Seth from India.
Oh, right. Carolyn is bringing a man who takes tours on the Buddha circuit in India. She took it last year and loved it, and she's bringing him to speak about India and maybe persuade some people to go with him on the next tour. So that will be a wonderful occasion.
A whole month of guest speakers.
Yes.
It did.
It was wonderful. People just appeared. So I will miss you all, and you are all invited to come and visit me. I would love to see you. We can watch the birds, and there's not much going on where I live, but there are birds and squirrels, and it's very pretty.
So there's Shashin.
There's one more Tuesday.
Yeah.
Yes, I already printed out the next thing, so I'm ready for it. Donna Lynn and I are leaving Sashin maybe a little early so we can go up to Empty Nest to a spot meeting over that weekend after Sashin. So we might leave the evening before it's over. I think it would be wise of us to do that. Anything else? It's a busy time.